This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all Have Another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Basic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and with you for the next hour. Want to extend a special welcome to everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206 and everybody tuning in worldwide on our website with our live streaming. It's all there for you, horseracingradio.net. You know, every week I get the opportunity to visit with so many individuals who help to make this sport a success, and those people who dedicate their entire lives to the sport of thoroughbred racing. And you know, I'm talking about the trainers. Tonight's show is really going to be a lot of fun. Going to visit with Hamilton Smith in the first half of the program and Doug Anderson in the second half. You'll hear their stories. You'll hear how they got started and some of the people that helped them along the way. And yeah, we'll talk about some of their career highlights as well. Let's get started. Hamilton Smith. Well, he's trained 1,794 winners to date. His runners have earned more than $33 million in purses, and he is with me now on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Hamilton, thanks for taking the time.
You're welcome, yes.
Happy
glad to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And boy, 1,794 winners. Where does that time go?
I don't know. I'm trying to get to 2,000 if I possibly can, but I don't know if I'll make it. But it's been a good run. I've enjoyed every minute of it, to tell you the truth. We've had some ups and downs, naturally, like everybody does in this business. But, I'm proud of what we've done so far.
You mentioned trying to get to 2,000. How aware? It sounds like you're pretty aware of that number. And does that put a little more pressure on you now?
No, not really. I just something, you know. I had several guys tell me, you know, how many I had, and they asked about the 2,000 plateau and so forth. And this sounds like something good to shoot for. And hopefully, if I get the right kind of stock and I do things the right way, I can get that.
Take me back to the beginning. Where did the love of horse racing begin for Hamilton Smith?
Well, actually, my older brother got my family into it. He had a pony. We from South Carolina originally, and he had a pony and used to ride all over the country down there. And he got to where he really loved the horses. And we had some neighbors who lived about 5 or 6 miles from us that had some thoroughbreds. And he went up there, and one thing led to another. Before long, he was galloping horses. And he became a jockey in the late 40s, early 50s, and got my dad interested in it a little bit. And it went on from there.
Did you ever think about doing anything else?
Not really, no. I went into the racing official end of it a little bit after I got out of the service back in the late 60s, and I tried that for 3 or 4 years, and I just didn't like the inside work too much. I prefer to be outside.
What'd your parents think about you being involved with horse racing and following in your brother's footsteps, so to speak?
Well, they were all for it. My dad was a farmer by trade. He farmed about 1,500 acres of land, and that's what I was growing up. That's what I did, and farming just wasn't my cup of tea. I didn't like they looked like they just worked themselves to death and got nothing for it, so to speak. And you just gotta like what you do. And he loved farming, and I didn't care for it much. No, they didn't mind me going with the horses at all.
What do you remember about the first time you ever went to a racetrack?
Well, I was with my older brother that rode, but he eventually got too big, and he started training a few horses, and my dad had bought a broodmare too, and anyway, he he went to New England with those horses to train, and during the summer months, my brother Frank and I, he's 18 months older than me, but we'd go up there in the summer months and spend the summer at the races, and it kind of grew on both of us, and it's something we both enjoyed.
Safe to say that they were the ones that kind of taught you about the game?
Yeah. My older brother, John Edward, he was the one that got both of us started in it. He taught us, you know, about the game. And we met a lot of interesting people up in New England back then. They had some awfully good horsemen up there. Something you don't see much of anymore. But I worked for different trainers up there. You know, my brother didn't have many horses, so I just get out and walk huts and what have you, and got to know some pretty interesting people. And it just grew on me, and I figured that's what I wanted to do one day.
What was your first official job on the racetrack? Was it working with your brother, or were there other trainers that you got a chance to be around?
Well, my first job on the racetrack was walking huts for a guy by the name of Howard Monk. And that was way back when. And then I worked for Dick DeStacio, and I worked for Vinny Blaze a little bit. One another. Then mostly for my brothers, though. After my older brother John Edward quit training, my brother Frank, the gone to the training center, and he trained for a year or two. But then we all worked together.
What's the biggest lesson you learned in those early days from working with those individuals?
Put a care of the horse was the main thing. They really, back then, if a stable would run a horse, everybody that worked for that outfit would be either on the outside fence watching that horse run and rooting him on and so forth. And it's something you don't see anymore. But you just had a love for the horse himself. And I would watch these older guys and good grooms and stuff put bandages on, and they would. I'd talk to them and ask questions, and they would answer the questions, and I'd learn through some grooms mostly about the leg work and stuff on the horses, and I did it myself, so. Yeah.
What year was that, Hamilton?
That was in the late 50s, early 60s.
So how much, I know you talk about the care of the horse, but how much has the game changed since that time?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Dramatically.
Yeah.
They just don't train the horses the same as it used to. We didn't run year round back then, and we'd always take our horses home in winter months and blister them and do this and that and another, and take them back in the spring. But it's changed with the year round racing is the main change in it, and the labor force has changed drastically from what we used to have. We used to have the guys that was raised down on the farms in South Carolina, go up with the horses and stuff, and they really took a big part in the horses themselves. They love them to death. And you just don't get that connection right now anymore with the help.
Well, you don't
like we used to get.
You don't win nearly 1,800 races without being able to overcome some adversity and being able to adjust along the way. How much have you had to change your approach to training and running your business over the years, Hamilton?
Well, you know, everything's computerized now, but no, for me personally, I hadn't changed a whole lot. They talk about me around the racetrack here, but I'm here 7 days a week, and I still get up early in the morning and come to work. I don't rub horses anymore, but I do catch a stall or two every now and again when we're a little short of help. But I personally train horses every day. They go the right way to the racetrack, and I breeze them when it calls for it and so forth and so on. I see a lot of these younger guys and a lot of horsemen, I guess they're horsemen, but they jog the wrong way, and that's it, and they run them accordingly. But I don't do that, and I train more or less like the old school.
What advice would you give to a young trainer just coming into the game today?
Well, boy, I don't know if that's... It's hard there's not too many ups anymore for a young guy to come in unless he's really got some connections. The money factor is so high now and the expenses and so forth that it's tough to really, unless they can really got love for the horses, it's tough to convince somebody to do this kind of work. I would just tell him, you know, you got to be dedicated for one thing, and you got to, like I said, love the horses, and you got to be able to handle help and other people, and be able to deal with people. And you know, the owner's trainer, dealing with the owners is one thing, but you have to learn to deal with your help as well. And you got these kids that work 7 days a week and or whatever. You know, you got to have a little compassion for them as well as your horses. But it's a very tedious game anymore, and you know, like you see nowadays, owners change trainers quite often, and naturally you help situations the same way. But I would tell them to keep the nose clean and work hard and try to present yourself as well as you can.
Talking with Hamilton Smith on Trainer Talk, presented by Fezzik Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Hamilton, you mentioned the owners, and every trainer that I've ever had on this program always says that if you have a good relationship with your owners, then that certainly goes a long way in helping you be successful. Talk about some of those owners that you've had involved over the years that have helped you get to where you are today.
Well, I got William Backer, one. He, you know, he was there in Virginia, and he's helped me out a lot. He's given some decent horses to feed, and you know, trusted me and everything. Back in the old days, we had some local guys from South Carolina that we had Alton Brown down there, and the Winges. Mr. Winges was a big owner in New England back in the day, and you know, he sent some horses to me. And but the main thing is communication. You know, you got to be able to talk to the owners and keep them informed of what's going on almost on a daily basis. And you know, I tell all of my owners, you know, call me anytime you want and every day if you like, and we discuss whatever you want to discuss. And that's very important to them, because a lot of them just can't get out and see the horses run every time, and actually paying bills is actually what you're paying them for.
Yeah, well, it's not always easy either, right? Because you're not always giving them positive news. There's times when you have to give them news that they might not want to hear.
Oh, yeah. That's quite often, really. These animals, they're pretty fragile, and we asked a lot of them, and actually going to come up with injuries to us periodically, and you know, those phone calls are difficult to make, especially anything real bad. But I hadn't had but a few owners that really got upset when horses would come up with problems. Most of them, they realize the game, and most of them taking a stride, and we just, like I say, if you got a good relationship with the owner, where they trust you and trust your judgment and everything, and if something happens to one of them, they know it's not your fault. And, you know, they react accordingly.
Hamilton, let me take you on a little trip down memory lane and rewind the clock to 1986 in the Woodlawn Stakes. That Grade 3 event was won by a horse you saddled named Fork Union Cadet. It was your first graded stakes win. What do you remember about that day?
Oh, it was a big day for me. I was sitting on top of the world. I had that horse for, I think it was Jim Peters had him, if I'm not mistaken. But he's a nice-looking little horse, and he beat one of the favorite horses around here at that time. And it was a feather in my hat, so to speak. I really got a big thrill out of that. I have his picture actually hanging in my home.
Wow. How long had you been training on your own when you finally won that race? Were you just getting started?
Actually, I started training on my own in the late 70s.
Okay.
And been doing it ever since.
So between 86 and your next greatest stakes win, that came in 2005. You had nearly a 20-year wait for that next greatest stakes win, which came in the Violet Stakes. That's another Grade 3 with Humoristic. Those 20 years, after you win that first one, you had to be thinking, boy, when am I going to get back to that top of the mountain again?
Yeah, you better believe it. Now, you gotta realize I didn't have the well-bred horses and so forth and so on that a lot of these guys get. Most of my stock was homebreds and stuff, and the same way with Humoristic. She was a homebred, and Mrs. Peralta Ramos had her, and still has it, I believe. Anyway, she was really one of the better fillies I've trained once I got on the turf course. And it really turned her around. She wasn't much horse on the dirt, but when we tried her on the grass, well, she excelled. And she wound up being a pretty nice filly for her. But no, those graded wins are few and far between with outfits like I run. I really don't have the, hadn't had in the past the horse flex to warrant, you know, running too many of them in graded stakes anyway. But
well, you had a pretty good run from 2005 to 2012, because not only did you win that Violet Stakes in 05, you came back with Humoristic again 2 years later and won the very same race. And then you took the Virginia Oaks in 2009 with Blind Date. And then 2012 had to be a special year for you because you were actually on that trail with Winner Done Talking.
Yep, that was a good play for us. And, you look back on things like that, especially like with Done Talking. Running in 2 weeks before the Derby is not the smartest thing to do, but that's the only option we had if we wanted to become eligible for the Derby, and got lucky enough to win it. And we were all excited about it, and it was a very, very big experience for us. But I've had better luck overall over my years with fillies, more so than McColts, as far as graded winners or any winners, stake winners for that matter. But Blind Date was might have been the best filly I've ever trained. She doesn't short money wise and all, but she was really a runner. She could really run.
Why do you think you've done better with the ladies, so to speak, Hamilton?
I can't put my finger on it, but I don't know. I just had better luck with the fillies. They've all most of my stake winners are fillies, and it just happened that way. There's nothing I can't figure out what I'd do different than anyone else would do, but I train them, just like I would a colt, almost. And I just had better luck with the fillies.
What's the one thing that you're never going to forget about going down that road to the Derby, winning the Illinois Derby with Done Talking? If you said it was a special experience, but what's the one thing that Hamilton Smith will always remember?
Well, leading up to the Derby, they have this deal here where the trainers get up and they have each trainer that's participating in the Derby get up and they ask them questions and so forth. We went to that deal that night and not knowing what they were doing. I didn't know. And Dr. Lavin came up to me and said, good that you're here and what have you, and said, we'll see you after a while. You're first. And I didn't know what he meant by being first. But anyway, when we sat down at a table, they had all the dignitaries and the governor and everybody else was there, I think. And so the first trainer that called up, analyze their horse and give their thoughts on the horse and so forth was me. And I'm a country boy now. I'm not a big man. but I was the first one up there, and I'll never forget that. Those guys asked me a lot of questions, and I made it through that, put it that way. But I thought that was a hell of an experience for me.
Yeah, do you ever pinch yourself when you're sitting in the same room with, you mentioned all the dignitaries and the governor, but, here you are just, you referred to yourself as a country boy, and you're sitting in the same room with some of the greatest trainers and jockeys and owners ever to be part of this game. Do you ever pinch yourself, Hamilton?
Yep, I did. I looked around when I was sitting there, and I tried to take in all that I could. I'd see all these guys that I knew from years back, and naturally the guys that were successful during those years, And he said, well, I never thought I'd be here, but I really didn't. I never thought I'd ever have a horse to go to the Derby or the Triple Crown races. And just so happened, it worked out. We didn't fare out too good for the results of the Derby itself, but it makes it feel awfully good to be able to participate. I tell you that. It's the most prestigious race in the world. And just to be able to have a horse that's eligible for it is I think it's an accomplishment in itself.
There's always two goosebump moments for me when we get to broadcast the Derby every year, and that's when the horses start to make the walk over from the barn area to the saddling area in the paddock, and then when they come onto the track to the playing of my old Kentucky home. Tell me about those two moments and being part of that.
Well, that was the walk over itself. I was supposed to be interviewed on the walk over. And they had two guys walk over with me, and something happened, and they couldn't get it done. Something happened technically with the deal. We didn't get the interview done on the walkover, but you know, you look at the crowd and what a crowd it was, and people yelling and wishing you luck and one thing or another, and you know, this is an experience. Walking down the backside, you know, I was in Dale Roman's barn. He asked me. He said he had a stall feather for me, and so that's where I stayed. And his barn up toward the half a mile pole, and we walked all the way down the backside to get to that area where we waited to walk over. And they must have been 10 deep down the backside. People were just, you know, the barn area was full of people. I don't know how many thousands were back there, but that was a sight to see in itself. And they were all wishing me well and everything else. So it does bring, you know, get goosebumps.
How about my old Kentucky home? How was that?
Oh, that was something too. The paddock was so crowded you couldn't hardly move. But you know, just to see people there that, like I say, it's the most prestigious race ever. And you know, the crowd is into it, and they almost like they want to touch you, the horses, and everything else. And we walked out and they played that song. You know, it's a special feeling, I tell you that.
Talking with trainer Hamilton Smith on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Dipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He has nearly 1,800 wins to his credit. His runners have earned more than $33 million in purses. Hamilton, I'm just curious, who would you say is the best trainer that you've ever had the chance to be around?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. You have to, you know, trainers are unique. I mean, they're not alike by any means. Since I've been in Maryland, I thought Bernie Barnes did a real good job with the two-year-olds, and Dickie Small did a real good job with horses going around the ground. But prior to that, when I was in South Carolina, I had the pleasure of meeting Max Hirsch and Woody Stevens and Frank Whiteley. Actually, Frank Whiteley used to come over to our place. And to me, Woody Stevens and Frank Whiteley might have been the two of the smartest and most successful trainers I've ever had the pleasure to meet. And they were Woody Stevens and Mr. Hirsch, they used to come down to our farm to shoot birds, go bird hunting. And we got to know them real well. But just listening to them talk, and naturally people ask them about their experience with certain horses and so forth, and I tell you, it's a very, very good experience. But they were both probably the top three guys that I had a pleasure meeting.
Yeah, I can imagine that had to be very, very special for you, Hamilton.
Just
3 or 4 minutes left here before we have to wrap up, and hard to believe that this 25 minutes or 28 minutes has already flown by, but... You mentioned earlier coming to the track every day and being there 7 days a week. And with everything you've already accomplished, Hamilton, and I know you're still pointing for 2,000 wins, but what still motivates you and gets you out of bed and gets you to the barn in the morning?
I just enjoy it. You know, it's, like I said, I'm from the country, and I've worked that out all my life. And, you know, I'd still get a thrill out of these horses. $10,000-$12,000 claims winning this is just as well as I do some of the better ones. But, you know, it's an obligation, naturally, but I enjoy it. I enjoy every aspect of it. And, you know, you get to mingle with the people in the afternoon at the grandstand. But the morning work, I've got some boys here that work with me quite a while now. And we laugh and joke, and we do things and work together. And it's just... something I've been all done. I don't want to do anything else, put it that way. And my wife has tried to get me to make me change, but I like it.
All right, so tell me this. You have a couple of free days when you're not at the racetrack, and I know it's very, very rare in the life of a horse trainer, but what other things does Hamilton Smith enjoy doing?
I played golf, used to, quite a bit. Actually, when I went to college, my roommate was on the college golf team, and he and I used to play golf 5 or 6 times a week. That's why I didn't stay in college too long. But but anyway, I enjoy golf. I used to enjoy fishing and stuff like that as well, but I hadn't done any of that too much since I came to Maryland. But golf has been the biggest thing. I love football, sports. And I go to, you know, every now and again, we'll get a chance to go to Ravens game or something like that, and I enjoy that. Actually, I trained horses for a couple. Sam Huff, I had a few horses for him, and he would come to the barn and tell me his stories about professional football, and he was one of the best to ever play the game, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's got to be quite a thrill to get to be around those people, and that's part of what horse racing is all about. You know, you mentioned being a country boy and just growing up loving the sport, and now here you are rubbing elbows with some of the greatest athletes ever to play.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it's an experience and a thrill, and I really enjoy that. And you know, a lot of these trainers too, like Dale Romans, he's a good friend of mine. And my brother, especially, my brother breaks a lot of yearlings for him. And we come to know them and different ones. And you know, watch those guys excel, you know, in the higher ranks. You know, gives you a little satisfaction in itself.
Well, Hamilton, it's been unbelievable to hear your story here tonight. Can't thank you enough for spending a little time with me on Trainer Talk. And all the best moving forward. Good luck getting to number 2,000. We'll be cheering for you. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to get a gift from one of our sponsors. It is Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those out to you. And as always, greatly appreciated, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
All right, Hamilton Smith here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Just a country boy. You heard him say it. Well, he got a chance to be on the big stage, and that's all you can ask for is that chance. Second half coming up next, Doug Anderson will join me, fresh off of that victory in the American Beauty Stakes at Oaklawn with Sugar Shock. We'll hear his story on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Wonder where you'll find a good broodmare prospect in February? Well, wonder no more. It's the Fasig Tipton February Sale on Sunday, February 8th and Monday, February 9th. At Fasig Tipton February, you'll find an abundance of talented fillies off the track, stakes performers, and graded stakes winners, many by top international stallions. Plus, many attractive stallions with first runners and yearlings in 2015 and a Kentucky Derby winner expecting his first foals. That's typical of the quality of covering sires for in-foal mares at the Fasig Tipton February sale. So make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton February Winter Mixed Sale. With something for every buyer, it's the place to be on Sunday, February 8th and Monday, February 9th. Sunday session begins at 3 p.m. with Monday kicking off at 10 a.m. For more information, visit FasigTipton.com.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Breathing easy is the key to equine performance and health. That's why horsemen around the world count on Flair nasal strips to protect the lungs of their equine athletes without drugs. Flair strips' gentle support of the nasal passages reduces the soft tissue collapse that occurs in all horses during intensive exercise. 7 clinical studies prove the benefits of Flair strips for reducing lung bleeding, reducing fatigue, and shortening recovery time. Reduce bleeding, recover faster, perform better. Prevent, protect, perform with Flair strips.
Whether you're playing at home or on the go, let Daily Racing Form be your eyes and ears at the track with DRF Live. Every weekend, go to live.drf.com on your desktop or mobile device, and you'll get a direct line to DRF's on-track team all day long. Imagine a live stream of real-time insights straight from the track with information you can only get from being there. DRF's team brings you real-time information you can't get from any PPs. Mike Watchmaker's keys for a pick four at Belmont. Jay Privman from the paddock at Santa Anita. Mike Welsh trackside at Gulfstream. It's like having the whole DRF team on your own personal live feed, bringing you top plays, paddock observations, and track condition changes. DRF Live is filled with actionable wagering advice, helping you to find value as the odds are shifting. Visit live.drf.com this weekend for DRF Live. That's live.drf.com for DRF Live.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby! What a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic! It's a race for the ages! Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Toneland! Wise Dan gets his head in front! The first million-dollar race in Keeneland history!
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. HRRN's newest show is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Every Tuesday, Mike Penna and Christina McManigal will bring you exclusive interviews with the best jockeys in the business. Tune in on our website for a new episode every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, exclusively on horseracingradio.net.
This is David Cohen.
This is Gary Siaka.
This is David Jacobson.
This is Gary Gallo.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Basic Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Really enjoyable visit with Hamilton Smith in the first half of the program. It was really neat to hear his story and everything that he's accomplished over the years. And the second half of the program is going to be very much the same as I visit with trainer Doug Anderson, who is fresh off his huge win with Sugar Shock in the American Beauty Stakes at Oaklawn Park this past Saturday. Doug Anderson has trained 232 winners to date. His runners have racked up more than $5.5 million in purses, and no doubt Sugar Shock is at the top of the list when it comes to those runners trained by Doug Anderson. He is here with me now on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Doug, thanks for spending a little time with me.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure being on the show.
Yeah, happy to have you here. And boy, you think about that performance this past weekend, you had to be absolutely thrilled with that effort that Sugar Shock put in.
We were, you know, a little apprehensive about how she'd come back and everything. You know, she didn't like the last race she pulled up and everything, and so we were a little concerned, you know, but we sure are tickled pink.
Well, you got to experience a pretty lofty high with her last year, last April, when you won the Grade 3 Fantasy at Oaklawn, and I can imagine that had to be among your career highlights.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, just kind of a small trainer, and just, you know, to find something like her and be part of her it's unbelievable.
Yeah, is there maybe a little extra satisfaction in knowing that, hey, I don't have the numbers that a Todd Pletcher or a Bill Mott or a Bob Baffert has or a Asmussen, but yet I'm still able to compete in some of these big races? Is there a extra little bit of satisfaction in knowing that?
Oh, yeah, there is. I mean, you know, because, like you said, you don't have the numbers and the quality of horses or anything like that. And, you know, to come up with one that's special like this, it's, you know, kind of a dream come true.
When did you first know she was special?
Well, some gentleman breaker there in Lexington by the name of Tony O'Campbell, and when they broke her, he says, boy, she, you know, does everything just perfect. She's just smart and stuff. And then when I got her, I mean, kind of let her breeze a little bit, and she just showed some class right away and everything. So I told the guys, that my partners and everything, that I says, boys, I think we're going to be on a pretty good run here once.
That brings up a good point, Doug. Can you often tell that early in a horse's career that they have that, I'll call it the it factor?
You know, you think so sometimes, and boy, these horses kind of fool you every once in a while, too. And you come up one with being a morning glory every now and then, and then in the afternoon you get them out there and they go, what's this? I'm just kind of a dud once in a while. So it's challenging, very challenging.
Do you remember one that really surprised you that you said, well, I don't know if he or she is going to make it, and all of a sudden they turn out to be a pretty nice horse?
Yeah, I had a little filly for some people in Iowa one year, and they wanted me to buy half of her from them, and I was training her, and we'd were, and she would never work or anything like that. And I told the people, I said, no, I'm really not interested in her. And well, she proceeded to, the next 2 years, she ran out of 140,000, I think it was. So it was a deal where she showed nothing in the morning. Even after we run her a few times, she would never show nothing in the morning. But in the afternoon, she'd run her guts out.
Well, I guess it's a lot like professional athletes where you'll hear the term, you can't teach heart. And I've always said racehorses are along that same line. You can never tell what's inside of that horse that's going to make them perform at top level in the afternoon, can you?
No, you never know. I mean, if we knew that, I mean, we'd all be multimillionaires, and
yeah,
we're not.
Well, Doug, let's go back to where it all started for Doug Anderson, and take me there and tell me how you first got involved and got to be around the sport of horse racing.
Well, I grew up on a farm in Nebraska, and we always had horses when we were kids and everything. My dad and his grandpa, or his dad, had horses, had thoroughbreds when they were growing up and everything. And then, like I said, we had horses when we were young, and we raced our Shetland ponies against each other at the county fairs and just kind of went from there.
Did you think maybe you wanted to be a rider at one point?
I sure did. I sure did. But my dad said, nope, you'll never be a rider, because he says your feet are too big, he says.
He knew right away.
Yep.
Did you give it a go, though? Did you at least try it?
No, I never did. By the time I got out of high school and everything, I was too big and everything. I kind of had dieted in high school for wrestling and everything, so I thought, yeah, that's not for me. And everything. So I have galloped horses and everything for myself, and all the way up till about 2 years ago and everything. So
how come you stopped galloping?
I've been on quite a few of them.
Yeah, how come you stopped?
Well, getting up there a little bit, and I was on a 2-year-old in Iowa here a couple of years ago, and went over the outside rail and I cracked my back and everything. So I thought, well, it's about time to give it up.
Yeah, smart move. Good move on that
front.
Yeah. So growing up in Nebraska, it's not like growing up in Kentucky, where you're surrounded by major breeding farms, surrounded by the likes of Churchill and Keeneland and those types of racetracks. How did you first become exposed to the sport of thoroughbred racing?
Well, we would go quite a bit to Exarban, or we had... They had some smaller tracks around there. There was Madison, Nebraska, Columbus, Nebraska, and then South Sioux City had racetracks. And we'd go to them, you know, on weekends whenever we could. And, you know, my dad knew a lot of the people that trained around there, and that's just kind of how I got involved in it.
So was your dad a big racing fan too?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. After we, the boys... We all got out of high school and everything. Dad kind of dabbled a little bit in it. Just kind of had a couple cheap horses there in Nebraska and just had some fun doing it.
Did he like your decision to get involved with the sport?
Well, yes and no. I mean, he never did discourage me from doing it or anything like that, but he sure thought I could do something different and everything.
What else what else would you have done if you weren't being around the racetrack and getting involved with horses?
Probably a farmer. we had, you know, like I said, we grew up on a farm and we had row crops and cattle and everything, and probably that's what I would have done.
Now, do you have any other family members that are involved in racing in any way?
Yes, I do. I've got a younger brother, and he's a big part of this my operation. He really is. His name is Tom, and you know, when I'm gone, he's the main cog in the wheel.
Now, did he get into it because of you and seeing you do what you're doing?
No, he was kind of. I mean, like I said, I mean, he rode ponies and everything at the county fair too, and he enjoyed it, and you know, he got around helping my dad and stuff when they had, like I said, they had a couple horses, and he enjoyed it, and he's still active doing it.
What do you race for at the county fair? Is that ribbons?
Well, we had some ribbons, and we did race for a little prize money. I mean, we'd get maybe $35, $40, you know, if we win a race. And we thought we had the world by the tail at the time.
How many races did you win? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't know. We had a little Shetland pony. His name was Nickel. And I don't know how many times we run him and everything, but he never did get beat. Only time we had to, or got him beat, is when we had to face older or bigger horses. And everything, but otherwise we could never get him beat. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Sounds like the Zenyatta of Shetland ponies.
Yeah. Yep. But no, it was a lot of fun growing up and being around, you know, the people that you knew and in that area where we were born and everything. Everybody seemed like they had horses and, you know, just more or less quarter horses and everything. So we just had a blast.
Talking with trainer Doug Anderson on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, you can catch us every single Wednesday evening, 6 to 7 Eastern, Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. So, Doug, what was your first official job on the racetrack?
Oh, I guess grooming horses, really. I went to Omaha and started grooming horses there. I don't know, in the late 70s, I guess it was, when I went back there and started grooming horses. Worked for Charles Dickey for, I don't know, about 8 years, I guess it was.
Oh, wow. What was that like?
We had a lot of fun. I mean, we won quite a few races, and at the time, you know, got to go around the country quite a bit and see something that never had seen before.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there things that he taught you that you still use today?
Oh, absolutely. There's things that he taught me that, you know, you keep in back for some, you know, resources and everything.
Yeah.
And then there's some things you end up learning on your own by trial and error.
Where did you go after working with Charles Dickey?
Oh, I just went out on my own. Just picked up a couple, you know, some cheap horses and kind of just try to keep my head above water for a while, I guess. I mean, and kind of stayed around Nebraska, went to Minnesota a little bit, and then kind of got to go into Chicago. And then, oh, I don't know, after Chicago, that one year, Iowa was going to open up, and I had happened to buy a little Iowa bred filly, and, well, I thought, well, time to go to Iowa and kind of made that my home now.
What were those early years? Were there some struggles trying to get your business off the ground?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, you know, you've got to perform for people to notice you. And with just a handful of horses, you know, it's a little tough, but, you know, we started doing some good and you know, then I've just picked up slowly, you know, owner here and owner there, and got some great owners right now.
Now tell me about a couple of those owners who have supported you and are supporting you today.
Well, I've got Warren Bush and Aaron Kennedy and Jim and Helen Colder that own Sugar Shock. I mean, they have been with me for quite a while, and we have done some good, you know, and they're just fanatics about this game right now.
Hamilton Smith told me in the first half of the program today, and I've had several trainers come on this program and say the same thing, that the communication with your owners is critical to being successful. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You've got to let them know what's going on from day to day. I mean, something could change, and, you know, then if you leave them out in the cold, it's how's come you're doing this? And, you know, and you kind of build a untrust in him if you don't talk to him.
Yeah, it's a matter of building relationships just like anything else, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. The more open you are with them, the better they are with if something really happens bad, you know, and you can take it kind of in stride more than if you don't tell them about something going wrong, you know, and it's just tough.
What would you say, Doug, was your first big break that really got you going after you went out on your own?
Well, a friend of mine in Nebraska happened to had a old mare and everything, and he bred it to this one horse, and he says, "Well, I don't want to raise it or have this foal and everything," and she ended up being a pretty nice little mare, and you know, I did some good with her, and then a couple people seen what I was doing, you know, with just her, and they give me one or two horses, just kind of went from there.
I can imagine that would be something that would jumpstart you. I guess when you finally do get that one decent runner that gets out there and you get your name out there a little bit more, it starts to get a little bit easier. But, Doug, I know from talking to so many trainers on this show, you never stop hustling and trying to get your name out there. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, if you don't, I mean, it's like, you know, you're just kind of standing at the edge of the world and you're ready to jump off because these people kind of, you know, they kind of forget about you in a hurry if you don't, like you say, keep your name out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine that winning a big race like the Grade 3 Fantasy with Sugar Shock and then, you know, coming back this weekend and taking the American Beauty, do you start to see an immediate effect from that, an immediate positive effect where your phone starts ringing and people say, "Hey, Doug, we want to talk to you about taking one of our horses"?
Well, it hasn't, but I have seen it with other people that way.
Yeah.
Like this weekend, I got a lot of congratulatorial messages and everything from people that, they might just barely know me, but it's really nice that people are paying attention.
How would you sum up your philosophy when it comes to training horses, and does it differ from younger horses and older horses?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I mean, with a young horse, I mean, I don't think you can just pound and pound on them right away. And, you know, you got to take your time developing them. If you get an old horse, you know, they've kind of been through the war already where you can go ahead and, you know, push the button a little bit harder on and everything. And because, you know, like I said, they've been through the war already and they know what's going on.
Tell me, Doug, about a horse that you've been around that you'll just, for whatever reason, maybe it's a horse that people haven't heard of, but you're just never going to forget this horse for whatever reason it might be.
Oh.
Beside your pony.
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, there's a old horse that I trained. I mean, he was just a neat old horse. I got him from some other people and a horse called Tiger Lake that, we were just so fond of him and you'd leave him out there to run and he'd try every time, you know, and he was just a nice old class horse that just kind of sticks in your memory about things.
Doug Anderson here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Doug, you know, I always start the program by mentioning that training racehorses is a commitment. It's 365 days a year. There are no holidays. There's no days off if you want to do it right. And I'm just wondering how you're able to balance things with your personal life and then training racehorses at the same time, because it takes so much time and it is such a big commitment. How do you do that?
Well, my wife is involved kind of in it with us, and I mean, that kind of helps. Otherwise, it's tough. I mean, when we're apart, it's kind of hard to do, to keep things going, but she's with me quite a bit, and that really helps. I mean, otherwise, like I said, it's just tough on marriages and tough on people themselves.
Do you have children?
No, we do not.
Well, that makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, we were both married later on in life, and neither one of us had any children, and we, really enjoy each other.
Did you meet on the racetrack?
Yes, we did. Quite a few years ago in Omaha, and on the racetrack, she worked for some other people, and I knew her then, and I met, knew her when we went back to New Jersey a couple times, and I don't know, it took quite a few years for us to get together, I guess.
Well, they say behind every good man is a good woman, so it sounds like you found yours, and she's an integral part of everything and all the success that you're having now.
Yes, she is. She really is. I mean, and like I said, she's here in the morning, then she's got another job. She helps at the racetrack, and then, back and forth to the barn. So, I mean, she is. She's a big part of it.
Well, there you go. I'll get you a copy of the show so that you can play this back for her for extra credit when you need it.
Okay,
with all the kind words that you're saying about her. Absolutely. Doug, what's still left on the Doug Anderson bucket list that you want to accomplish in the sport?
Well, I sure would like to have, some more decent horses. Not only just a one-time shot to say, like last year, made it to the Oaks, and it'd be nice to have just a few of them. We don't have to have a whole barn full of them, but it's awful nice that way.
Hamilton Smith just told me his story of being around the Kentucky Derby with Dunn Talking, the Illinois Derby winner in 2012. What was your experience like being around that Oaks atmosphere with Sugar Shock?
Well, it was surreal. I mean, you see all these other people and the excitement, and it's just the thrill of being there. I got to bring my mom and my uncle, and it was just unbelievable. You just can't describe what it really felt like.
What's it like watching them go in the gate? A few butterflies in your stomach?
A little bit. Sometimes it is. I mean, now this last weekend it was really big butterflies. Just like I said, just don't know whether she's coming back or whether she, just kind of a freak like last year of just having a good year. But it was. I mean, and the Oaks was the same way. I mean, so.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe it was a little worse this time around because you didn't have that confidence because you didn't know quite what you were going to get.
Absolutely, absolutely. This was probably the worst this last time for butterflies for me that I've had all the time.
Wow, that's something else. Doug Anderson here on Train Talk. It's all presented by Faith Tipton. Doug, I know you don't have children, but if you did, would you recommend training racehorses as a profession to them?
That would be a tough deal. I mean, like you say, it's a 7-day a week, and it's 24 hours a day commitment to it. And I sure wouldn't discourage them from doing it, but I would try to steer somebody, maybe in a little different direction as, maybe working somewhere on a farm or something like that. I mean, but like I said, I would never discourage somebody.
What do you enjoy most about being a horse trainer?
It's the people. I mean, the different people that you meet and everything, and then the just the grace and thrill of watching a good horse or watching any horse. It's it's just a joy in my heart to see something move so perfect.
Doug, only a couple of minutes left before we do have to wrap this up, and really enjoyed hearing your story. But I always like to end by asking trainers to tell us something that people might not know about them, and maybe something that you like to do when you're able to get away from horse racing for a little bit.
Well, we've gotten to go to Hawaii with me and my wife here this year, and we really enjoyed it. I mean, we just like to travel a little bit once in a while, and that's probably about the most exciting place I've been for, you know, many years, and we enjoyed it very much over there. And if something would ever come down to it where we retire or whatever, we'd enjoy living over there.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people would. are you able to relax when you're on vacation like that, knowing that you have a whole stable? I know your brother's there holding down the fort, but are you still able to completely let yourself go and relax?
No, you're not. I mean, because you're still in the back of your mind, is everything going right? And you know, and from here to like there was so much time difference, and it was like if something was going on, they'd call me early in the morning, you know, so you just don't ever do relax 100%.
Doug, it's been amazing to hear your story. Really enjoyed the conversation, and want to wish you all the best moving forward with Sugar Shock and the entire stable. We'll be cheering for you, and like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to get a gift from one of our sponsors. It's Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those out to you, and again, thanks so much for taking the time. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Doug Anderson here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Hamilton Smith in the first half of the program. Really enjoyed both of those visits, and such unique stories. I mean, here's Doug Anderson growing up in Nebraska, and not exactly a hotbed for thoroughbred racing, although you did have Oxarbon back in the day. Hamilton Smith, he described himself as a country boy. Well, both Hamilton Smith and Doug Anderson found themselves on the big stage. Hamilton in the Derby, Doug Anderson in last year's Oaks. That's the beauty of thoroughbred racing. You don't have to be the biggest stable. You don't have to have the most money, the biggest owners. It can happen. A good horse can come from anywhere. And that's what Doug Anderson and Hamilton Smith experienced, and wish them all the best and continued success with their future careers. Don't forget, we're back tomorrow night. BristNet.com call-in show, 6 to 7. The Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview, Friday night, 6 to 7, in the Equine Forum, Saturday morning from 8 to 10. You can visit our website, horseracingradio.net, for a podcast of this show, all of our shows, and a complete 2015 broadcast schedule. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.